Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
So, Dr. Sheldon is in studio with us. So, hello, Sheldon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Was that the weekend voice?
That is my Barry White voice.
Well, welcome.
Hello.
Nice to have you. So what are we listening to this weekend?
So this week was the 30-year anniversary of that song going to number one. Can you believe it was 30 years ago?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
It's just...
Because
1994.
If I admit I do know what you're talking about, it means
yes.
People will figure out.
Yeah,
know.
Exactly. Mm. So 29 years ago, that song went to number one.
My word. Yeah. 30 years ago. Isn't that so? I mean, it feels like yesterday.
I know, it does. And that was such a banger, that song. We just
loved it.
I mean,
it
was first Creep, then that song.
And the videos.
Yeah. Oh, Lisa Left Eye Lopez was amazing. A real star.
Oh, my gosh. Where is she?
She passed away. Yes. In a car accident.
She did pass away.
Yeah. So.
One of them is, the other one still sort of does stuff, ne?
Yes. The other two are still have TLC.
I see one mainly doing more stuff than the other.
Yeah, Tion, the okay. T in TLC. And I know that they do. So they've done some reunions together and all of that stuff. But
Left Eye was the, I don't know.
She was,
that was my favorite.
And she was the big star in the band. She was the rapper.
She was the cool one.
And she only released one album before she passed away. And it was such a cool album, a hip hop album.
Yeah.
But this girl band. So I thought, well, let's look at girl bands this week. And so I've chosen all girl band artists. Girl bands were really popular in the 1930s and 40s. There were a whole lot of girl bands then. And then with the advent of Motown, there was a whole new generation of girl bands. The Supremes.
The Supremes.
Martha and the Vandals.
Diana Ross. Came out of a girl band.
Exactly, from the Supremes.
She wouldn't. Do you think she would have been what she is if...
No. And that is what the whole thing about the girl band thing and why I wanted to focus on girl bands specifically, because girl and boy bands are a great vehicle to create stars.
To launch.
Yeah. But they don't have longevity.
Yeah.
And the reason is because people don't get along with each other.
There's
drama and politics in any kind of a band situation.
Bring in the money, it gets tricky.
Exactly, and that's what happened with the Supremes and Diana Ross and the reorientation of the band, because the original lead singer wasn't Diana Ross, and then she got made the lead singer, and then the other two girls were upset about it, and then things just unraveled. Mm. But it's a great vehicle because you've got unity in numbers. And also, like if you look at the Spice Girls, which was 1997, and that was also, so they had one of their first hits also around about this time in 1997, was that you've got five different characters, which means from a marketing point of view, you're reaching five different audiences versus one audience. So in the 1960s, you had all of these girl bands, the Chiffons, the Marvelettes.
And before you go
far,
I mean, my understanding, and you could just correct me if I'm wrong, is that often there are orchestrated relationships by the executives.
Yes.
These are not necessarily always people who come together knowing each other.
Organically, no.
So generally, this is like a marketing thing.
Yes.
Lots of money being thrown at it.
Exactly.
Play nicely together, please.
Yes, and then they don't. Because they're not necessarily people.
Yeah,
you know, they didn't know each other. And sometimes, even when you do know each other, it doesn't work out because of politics and money and fame and all of that stuff thrown together. But most of these situations are situations in which a record company will orchestrate the union of these musicians. And then it doesn't end well. But I don't think the purpose in the long run is to...
Keep it together forever.
No, the idea is that maybe it will spin off into other income-generating streams.
Did these girls know each other before?
TLC.
Yes.
it doesn't seem that they did know each other. Okay. And then they formed, and the band did quite well. This was from their second album called Crazy Sexy Cool. Mm-hmm. And Crazy Sexy Cool was a huge album.
Huge.
It had the two number ones, Creep and Waterfalls. And sold 15 million units internationally, got a Best R&B Grammy Award. The song itself is the first song in music history which actually refers to the AIDS crisis within the song. Mm-hmm. And it also, Lisa Left Eye Lopez, I don't know if people remember this, but there was a bit of an incident. So this was 1994. The year before, Lisa Left Eye Lopez had a bit of an altercation with her boyfriend, who was a football player, who she was angry with, and she went into his room and she threw a whole lot of his sneakers into a fiberglass bathtub, and then she lit up the bathtub and the whole house went up in flames. Like $2 million house just blew up. It became a notorious event in music history, and she refers to some of that in her rap in the song. And she became like...
But, I mean, the thing about doing something like that as a rap artist, it gives you so much street cred that even if you're in trouble, like now you're going to go down as the baddie.
Exactly.
You know.
And people don't really... I mean... At the time,
they love it. Audiences love that kind of stuff.
It was spoofed on so many music videos
and film.
Yeah,
films.
And people were talking about this incident for the longest time.
Yes.
But Lisa was always a bad girl.
Yeah.
And that was the beauty. Like in TLC, that's what she was. That was her character in TLC. And I think the 1990s specifically was a time where this girl group thing was a big thing.
Yeah.
We had many. We had SWV.
Yes.
We had En Vogue.
Yes.
We had Eternal. We had Atomic Kitten. Or as I remember on one of those television shows in South Africa, when people were doing auditions, they called them Automatic Kitten. We had Destiny's Child, which we're going to look at today. We had the Spice Girls. We had the Braxtons.
Yes.
The three sisters. That didn't even work. We had Exposé. No. I don't know if you remember Exposé.
And they still try to do it again.
Who? The Braxtons. Yes. Wilson Phillips, which is a white girl band.
Yes.
But they were like homie.
I loved them.
They were really cool.
I liked them.
Jade and Janae. I mean, but I think it was a time, 1990s was an era in which... I think we came out of the greedy 80s where people, it was all about the bottom line and trying to strip down everything to the essence.
Yeah.
No fancy anything. Everything was very, very like minimalistic in the 1980s. And I think in the 1990s with the Gulf War and all of the chaos that was ensuing in the world at the time, people wanted something familial. Mm. And I think these girl groups gave them that feeling of like, being at home or like, you know, people unifying together. The Spice Girls certainly jumped on that bandwagon and they were exceptionally successful.
Sure, they were very successful.
But they only lasted for three albums.
Because actually...
Yeah, there was no,
there was no real talent.
There was no real talent there.
Sorry.
It was very much a marketing ploy. It is the truth. Yeah. And all five girls went on to lead solo careers and only two of them really were able to make something of it. Jerry Halliwell...
Did anybody try to sing after that? No.
Yeah, what do you mean? After the Spice Girls?
The Spice Girls.
Yeah, they all released solo work.
Hmm.
Emma Bunton released solo work. Mel C.
Mel did. I remember
C. She was probably the most successful out of the group.
Yes.
Then you had Mel G, who was the Scary Spice.
Mm-hmm.
She also released one album, but it was a flop.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria Beckham released an album. That
did
was
she,
a major flop.
Did she try to?
She tried to, but no. She spent most of her time taking care of David Beckham's career, and then Jerry Halliwell was the next one
image.
Who did, yeah. And Jerry Halliwell, who was the first one to leave the band, actually also led quite a successful solo career. So it was between Mel C and Jerry Halliwell. The rest sort of dissipated. But TLC were exceptionally successful, and but at the height of their success, which was Crazy Sexy Cool, they declared bankruptcy. which was the strangest thing, because another one of their stablemates was Tony Braxton, who also declared bankruptcy at the same time. And what was happening, and this is a trap that a lot of musicians fall into, is that at the height of your success, the record company is going to give you
everything.
The sun, the moon and the stars. They're going to pay for your trips to Hollywood. They're going to pay for your hotel accommodation. They're going to pay for your air flights. They're going to buy you Rolexes,
private jets.
Bentleys, private jets. They're going to give you all of this stuff. And what they were doing with Tony Braxton and TLC is they were putting it against their bill.
I was going to say, then they get to debit it all.
Exactly. When the profits came in, they were
left.
By the way,
there was a champagne bottle.
Yeah, exactly. The Cristal, we're going to take that off. And the Louis Vuitton bags that we paid for, we're taking that off. And actually, at the end of the whole thing, the girls landed up having to declare bankruptcy. So it was quite a sad state of affairs. They did carry on to release a few more albums. But and then Left Eye passed away, and then there was very little left in it for the three girls. So I think the important thing is that people need to be aware of the beast with which they play. Mm.
Let's play some more music.
Yes.
Should we do that? Well, that was Jemani. Does everybody remember Jemani? They two were sort of like put together through
So they were part of a talent competition called Coca-Cola Pop Stars.
Coca-Cola Pop Stars, yes.
And they were actually the runners-up to a band called Ghetto Lingo. Whatever happened to them? And I think
they became more successful, ne?
Yeah, I think these girls became more successful. The interesting thing is that between 2003 and 2019, they actually did quite well.
Mm.
I think they released in total about four albums, and then they decided that they were going to go and do separate ventures.
Do the record labels stick? So this was a whole television thing, So what actually happens after that? Does the prize come with the record label?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is why you'll often find that in a situation like Pop Stars or Idols or X Factor or whatever, one of the judges will usually have some sort of an affiliation with the record company.
Mm.
And that's because they are there to serve the interests of that specific record company. Like, what is it that they think their record company is going to benefit from?
Mm.
And so either they're going to have someone on the judging panel that's from the record label, in Idols, Dave Thompson, or someone from the record label that sat on the on the panel. Or they'll have someone in the background who will be there to represent
scouting
the record label.
Something,
like an A&R person from the record label. And so the competition is actually, like, the visual competition has nothing to do with the record label at the end of the day. And this is the thing that people often forget with these talent reality shows, is that it's not about the record label. It's not about becoming famous.
It's a television show.
It's a television show at the end of the day. And that's why people go, yeah, but I mean, we never heard from that person ever again. Yeah, because that wasn't the purpose.
Season was over.
Exactly. And so once the season's over, they move on to the next
group.
Exactly. And so I think a lot of people have that misconception. Another thing, I interviewed actually Heinz Winkler, the first winner of Idols.
Yes, I remember that.
And he said to me, had he not actually gone out of his way to do something,
yes,
the record company wasn't going to do anything for him. And that's what also people forget, is that you can't expect that the record company is going to do. Yes, you've got a record deal, but there's only so much the record company can do. You've got to actually do it for yourself. You've got to put yourself out there.
They are thinking you had all the cameras in front of you anyway, and that had nothing to do with you.
Yeah, exactly.
They were just there.
Yes.
So let's see if the cameras actually will stay on you.
Exactly.
Independently.
Indeed. So what will happen is the record company will then take on the winners and then start trying to promote and make them big, and try to, use the A&R machine within the record label in order to make these people even bigger stars. But at the end of the day, they can only make a star if they want to be a star. You know, like if they are going to you know, like reject the ideas, or if they're going to be difficult about it, there's nothing that the record label can possibly do.
The record label has other stars to worry about.
Exactly, and bigger ones, and ones that are generating income.
Proven stars.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so, I mean, but these girls did quite well. The whole idea behind Jamali and what they were communicating to their producers at the time is that they wanted to create like a very international sound, and you can hear that from that Love Me From Me. It's got a very international sound. Actually was written by Diane Warren. And
what?
Like, you're like, what? Diane Warren? Diane Warren is like one of the most prolific songwriters of all time and one of the most successful female songwriters in history. Written for Madonna. She's written for Celine Dion, Whitney Houston. Like, the Michael Jackson had a Diane Warren song. I mean, Diane Warren's an iconic songwriter.
Can I ask you a professional question?
Yes.
Was that a mistake?
What do you mean?
Going this route. So positioning themselves
as an international
act. International act.
I think it is problematic.
I think that was the mistake.
Yes. I think that is problematic. And the reason is that if you look at like a Tyler who's now blown up, you don't blow up by sounding like something that's already there.
You cannot try and beat Rihanna.
Exactly.
At being Rihanna.
Exactly.
You must bring South
Your
Africa.
Own flavor. Yeah.
To
and that is the beauty of where we are in our music evolution right now, is that, you know, our sound is something that other people want and other people are trying to emulate. Mm. And so it's fine. We've gotten to that place where people are now recognizing, you know, this is the South African sound. This is what it's all about. We want a piece of that action. Mm. I mean, I'm a piano's blown up. Across the world, there are people from all different genres who are tapping into that Amapiano sound. From Nigeria to Europe to the United States, people are into the sound. Mm. Now, that is the important thing. I mean, I think early 2000s, which is when these girls became big, there was like an aspiration to sound not South African.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I mean by was it not a mistake? Because I imagine if, let's just say, for instance, a Bongo Muffin had happened in this era where we have social media blowing you up, they would have been huge.
And even Boom Shaka.
Because they had the sound that sounded like authentic.
Yes.
This to me sounds like any other girl band anywhere in the world.
Exactly.
A bit boring.
Yeah. And with the Diane Warren song, which is... Because also this is another thing that I sort of started gathering.
Yeah.
Some artists that I know of have gone and they've met Diane Warren to try and procure a song for their album, South African artists. Mm. And they've said to me that they feel like there's almost like an A-list Diane Warren list of songs.
Oh, is it?
A B-list, a C-list, and a D-list.
Interesting.
So this Jamali song, although it's a nice song, and you can hear probably not from the Because You Love Me list.
But also... So they were so beautiful and sounded so great.
And very refined.
And maybe that's just it. Mm. That they could sing. I mean, that's not to question whether they could sing.
Yeah.
But there was nothing edgy.
Yeah.
Different.
Cutting edge.
Better.
Yeah. Look, I mean, they had a career for 16 years, so that's not bad. The first, the album...
Was it 16
years? Yeah, and the album went gold in South Africa. I mean, it's not platinum, 16. But it's still gold. Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Were they eating throughout the 16 years?
You're going to have to phone them and ask them if that was case.
I'm being genuinely...
They were doing things.
Were they paying bills throughout 16 years?
Well, I don't know. But I mean, they did. They released four albums. They must have been touring, doing a lot. And apparently they did go very corporate at one point, started doing a lot of corporate gigs. And you know, that is where money is.
Yeah. I would think.
Yeah. But I mean... If you go corporate, then how do you, you know, like that's where you go and retire is in doing corporate gigs. But.
Yeah. And, you know, again, that's not to say they can't sing.
Yes.
These were talented young people.
Look, and I think maybe they tried to follow the formula, which, like, for example, the Supremes in the 1960s with what Berry Gordy tried to. 2003. But. That was, you know, yes, it's an old formula, and it worked for the Supremes, but maybe it didn't work for Jamali.
You shouldn't have said that.
But that was Berry Gordy's idea, was to create something that was unchallenging.
Because... Hey, let's play another song.
All right.
We all know who that is.
Yeah, that's Mahlathini and the Mahotela Queen.
And they've been paying bills for how long with this song?
Since 1964.
Now we're talking. Yeah. You see now.
Yeah, 60 years versus 16.
You see now. And they were paying real bills.
Real bills.
With this song.
For many years. And because they're all there, that's an authentically
exactly
South African brand.
Exactly the point.
But so this girl band, actually, very interestingly enough, a few years ago I was invited to the Ellis Park Tennis Club.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a like underground party that I was invited to. And at the party, Damon Albarn was playing. I don't know if you know who Damon Albarn is, but he's the lead singer of Blur, a rock band from the 1990s. Mm-hmm. They were Oasis's like arch nemesis. Mm-hmm. But he was also part of a band called Gorillaz. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he was performing there. And
in come the Queens.
And the Mahotela Queens were there. I was like, what the heck is going on? And Moonshine Sanele,
yes,
who I think is amazing on stage. She's a phenomenal stage
performer. She's a performer, yeah.
The Mahotela Queens were there. I was like, but these girls, aren't these women like 160 years
let
old?
Let me tell you, let me tell you. You must eat what they eat. You must dance like they dance.
Wow, because they killed it on that stage.
Of course.
They ripped up that stage.
Discipline. It's being focused for decades, man. Decades.
I was blown away. Yep. And it was a small stage and they ripped it
up. Rocket.
They were
rocket.
Phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So this song is called Gazette or Gazette. Mm-hmm. And it's from a 1987 album called Paris Soweto. Mm. And it was written by Weston Corsi. Yes. So they were signed to a record label called Gallo. And Gallo, at the time in 1960, so Gallo had like A&R that dealt specifically with indigenous South African artists.
Yeah.
His name was Rupert Bopape. Mm-hmm. And he discovered many iconic South African acts. Yeah. And he was the guy who originally discovered these acts. He was an A&R. He brought them in. He was also a producer, so he did all the production work. A highly talented individual that worked for Gallo. And as the years progressed, that baton was handed over to Weston Corsi. So so the Mahotela Queens were there for Rupert Bopape and all the way to Weston Corsi. Mm. And they've now outlived Weston Corsi as well. And then the idea behind this ensemble was that it was like a super group. So it was Simon Kabinde, who is known as Mahlathini.
Mahlathini, yeah.
And then the Mahotela Queens. And the I don't even know how to pronounce the name, but the Mokgona Tshole Band, who were actually five domestic workers who decided that they were going to form a band. And it just goes to show, you know, there's this big thing that, you know, you need to, and that was the beauty of the shift in 1955 from like this more classical jazz era into the pop era. The pop era sort of in 1955 with Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley and the Comets, which was a hybridization of like black music and white music into one new music called rock and roll. It shifted the way that music, that individuals interacted with music. Mm. And so for the first time in music history, you didn't need to be someone who was highly formally trained as a musician to make music. The doors were kicked open for anyone to be able to make whatever music they wanted to. Yeah. And so it opened up the door for Elvis Presley, who was whatever, and all these other artists, and just proliferated to where we are today. Yeah. And so this was like these guys that wanted to make music. They started this band. And so Rupert Bopape put these three acts together and they became like a super group. But eventually Simon Kabinde passed away. And then Weston Corsi passed away, and the girls are still around.
You know what? I have another controversial question.
Yes. Are you going to ask me if they were paying the bills again?
Well, they should have been paying the bills because the music was good.
Yeah.
Were they properly paid? Is another question.
Well, that's the other question.
Did anybody steal their money?
Yeah. Well, I don't know the history of the Mahotela Queens, but all I know is that they are still there and they're still
kicking it. They are.
And they internationally recognized. They are highly respected.
They're hot.
And, I mean, I saw an interview with them just a few years ago. They're still as alert. And now they've swapped out some members for younger models.
No, but they're doing it.
But they're still there.
They're doing
it. It's an institution now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an institution.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's next?
So, I think... our next group is probably like the second biggest all-girl group of all time, mm-hmm. Destiny's Child. Mm-hmm. So originally, the band was four girls. Mm. La Travia, Beyoncé, Kelly, and LaToya. Mm. But and then halfway through, like they released one album and...
Something always goes wrong. One always gets upset. Yes. One always feels that the other one's getting more attention.
Yes. Well, Kelly and Destiny.
Kelly and Beyoncé
were friends.
Yeah.
From back. And actually, Kelly had moved into the Knowles
house
because there was problems at her own home. And she moved in and they were very good friends and whatever. And the band was managed by Matthew, who's the dad. Mm. Costumes designed by the mother. Mm-hmm. But then LaTavia and LaToya felt that they weren't getting enough attention, that all the attention was focused on Beyoncé. And on Kelly, and that they weren't getting any attention. They were also co-songwriters in many of the songs. And so eventually they were like, we out of here. Mm. And they left the band. Mm. And so it went from being a quartet, and they had... big album, that Writings on the Wall album, which was their second album, had Bugaboo, it had Bills, 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 it had big songs on it. Rodney Jerkins was the producer on that album. It was a brilliant album. And then halfway into preparing the next album, which was Survivor,
there was a falling out.
And the two girls left and they got someone in to replace her and then they got Michelle Williams. Mm. That other girl also landed up leaving. She was in for like a few months and then she left and it became a trio, just the three girls. And when this song came out, it was like next level. Mm. And Destiny's Child, I mean, I'm not the biggest Beyoncé fan, but when it was Destiny's Child, it was really hot. The music was amazing. Rodney Jerkins did some phenomenal production. And initially, also, Wyclef Jean was also involved in the whole production of Destiny's Child. That ensemble was hot. Mm. They're probably the second biggest all-girl group. Well, maybe the third. Because the Supremes are...
No, the Supremes are the Supremes.
Yeah.
They were the
12 number one hit singles. I mean, Destiny's Child didn't get anywhere close to that. Spice Girls were probably bigger than Destiny's Child because their first two albums alone sold 40 million units. Just the two albums, excluding singles. And then there was still a third album and a greatest hits. With Destiny's Child, they were really hot. Really big. And I think it was a real amazing launching pad for Beyoncé because off of that, she was able to then catapult her career into what it is today.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Number one hit.
Okay.
It was number one.
Yeah.
The album sold 10 million units. It was huge. And that was Destiny's Child. I was a big fan of Destiny's Child. Yeah. I was crazy about them. Not so much... Beyoncé. I loved Kelly. Kelly's solo material was brilliant. And Michelle Williams went on to become a gospel singer and she did some amazing work.
So this is now the music teacher talking in you now.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yes, definitely.
The music teacher talking in you.
Teach is here. Mm.
So she's got some stuff right.
Who?
Beyoncé.
Yes.
She's got the marketing right.
She's got the cult of Beyoncé down.
She's got the discipline.
Yes. She's hardworking.
She's got a work ethic, right?
Amazing work ethic.
So, what's the moral of the story? Sometimes all you've got to do is work harder.
Exactly. I think that is the moral of the story. There are so many artists.
You don't
artists.
Always have to have the talent. No. Talent is just a sprinkle.
It's just, I mean, actually, if you look at the music industry, most of the artists aren't actually talented.
And there are very, very few people who are both talented and are like pushers.
Yeah.
Hard work.
Prince
comes to mind.
Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are very few people. Quincy Jones comes to mind.
Oh, Quincy Jones.
But there are very few people who have got all of it, the talent and the work ethic.
Yes.
Babyface comes to mind too.
Yeah.
So there are very few people, but actually...
Well, Babyface, very talented, but singing...
No, I didn't say singing. Yeah. I said talent.
Yeah.
talent and the work ethic and
exactly.
the discipline.
Yeah,
because I think sometimes there is the talent and then there's no discipline, drugs and other things come into, and then it just goes all
then
so
it does,
wrong.
Then the talent is worth nothing anyway.
Yeah, then it goes so wrong.
I mean, and I've seen it so many times coming through my own hallways where you get these like super talented kids that come in and they just like everyone's told them how amazing they are and they don't make it past six months.
Yeah.
You know? And then you get those that don't
Luther
have
Vandross was like that.
Who?
Luther Vandross had talent and discipline.
Wow. And Luther started as a backing vocalist.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how he started his career. Yeah. So he started right at the bottom and worked his way all the way to the top.
Mm.
He was phenomenally talented. But and you see these kids and the ones that are hungry for it and are willing to do the work, they're not necessarily the most talented.
That's it.
Those are the ones that make it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about the talent. The talent is just a nice to have.
Mm.
You can work the rest out in a recording studio.
Mm.
The important thing is that you have the drive, the passion, the commitment to actually see it through.
You're spot on.
Yeah.
I mean, there are many, many people who, like Lyra, in her generation, it's hard work.
Oh, wow.
It was dedication, hard work, and then she just went past
exactly.
her peers.
Exactly. And that, I mean, she's, I mean...
Past her peers.
I saw her at the beginning, and she was very hard working.
Remember where she comes from. Arthur Stable.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And to actually persevere through that.
Mm. Where are the Arthur Stable people now?
So then we've got one more song.
Yeah.
And this is from one of my all-time favorite girl groups. But this was like, when the song came out, it was like Superstar Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
It was like two of the biggest, like Salt-N-Pepa and En Vogue.
Yes.
Like the collaboration of two girl groups in one. The one is a hip-hop girl group, and the other was like a... like an old school, like Supremes kind of girl group, like a very refined group juxtaposed against a very like raw hip hop group. And they did the song called What a Man. And that song was a banger back in 1993.
That's how we play it out, guys. We'll be back on Monday at 8. Thanks, everybody.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.